Architecture Then and Now with Karin. From the very dawn of consciousness, water was never merely a substance, it was an entity, sacred and deep. We cannot say exactly when or why humanity first recognized its uniqueness, but the very earliest testament to its divinity is found in the pages of scripture. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Genesis chapter 1:2. Water was there at the beginning. It is the cradle where life emerges. Its properties are unlike anything else in creation. Fluid yet unyielding, soft yet enduring, everywhere and nowhere at once. It doesn't simply sustain life, it is life, flowing through the rivers like shaping landscapes and civilizations with the same quiet persistence. Roman baths. Who were the ancient Romans in reality? What do we know about them? The most revered deity for the Romans was a sea god, whom they inherited from the Etruscan Athens. This god, Athens, may not have been the supreme deity, but he was the most worshipped. The Romans later adopted him, renaming him Neptune. Later, he was equated with the Greek Poseidon. There was also a purely Roman deity that is especially fascinating because it was a complete abstraction, with no analogies elsewhere. This was Genus, the god of beginnings and endings. The creature was depicted with two faces watching in opposite directions, his image have survived, one face looking forward and the other back. It was believed that during wartime the doors of Genesis' temple on the Capitoline Hill must never be closed and during peace never opened. In Titus Livius' book History of Rome was mentioned that in the first four centuries of Romans' history, the doors of Genus' temple were closed for only 14 years. The Romans had a profound affinity for water. There was a sacred attitude toward flowing water, whether spring water, river water, or water from an aqueduct. The Romans built temples along rivers and springs that were dedicated to the spirits of the place and were erected by the local communities themselves. Water remained for Roman citizens a current of living water with its own origin, its own spiritual existence, its own identity. For the Romans, water was an essential element of a special state of being that they expressed with the untranslatable word otium. In this condition, they combined the sense of a life task fulfilled, rest from work, war, or civic duty, leisure devoted to creativity, conversation, and reflection, and the enjoyment of beauty, both of cultivated nature and of works of art. It also translated as repose combined with dignity. All that was expressed by one word. It defies logical explanation that the inhabitants of the empire hardly used faucets. Water streamed into the cities in a continuous flows from household pipes, street fountains, and public drains, filling swimming pools to the brim and falling onto the ground. Water delivered to the city with such difficulty was discharged daily in thousands of tons into sewers and rivers, without bringing any practical benefit. that was not carelessness, but a matter of principle. Interrupting the natural flow of water brought into the city by the aqueducts was seen as unnatural and heretical. In Roman mythology, every cult was rooted in a fundamental image or concept. Obeying an unseen force, water streamed eternally from the darkness where it had always lain, rising into the light of the day. One gets the impression that the Romans' unusual love of water reflected their distinctive, harmonious approach to life. In this worldview, where the material prosperity, the development of civilization, and a culture of leisure and physical well-being were all woven together, bathing in Rome was a ritual. It held a fixed place in the daily schedule. It lasted a set amount of time, about an hour, and took place in a carefully designed environment. Public bathhouses appeared in Rome at the end of the Republic. Their number grew rapidly, right up the end of antiquity. In the 1st century BCE, there were 170 of them, and by the 4th century CE, 900 or even 1,000. The first large-scale baths were a gift to the city from Agrippa, Augustus' closest associate, in 25 BCE. Baths were used not only for rest, but also for sport. In both private and public baths, space was set aside for ball games, gymnastic exercise, and sunbathing. Originally, the core of the architectural composition was the palestra, a large courtyard for athletic training, with the other rooms arranged around its perimeter. This is how the Stabian baths in Pompeii were laid out. But already in the baths of Titus, we see a new tendency, one that soon prevailed completely. All the bathing rooms were gathered into a single integrated block, placed in the middle of a vast courtyard surrounded by porticos and exedra, a deep semicircular niche, usually topped with a semidome. The clearest expression of this scheme is found in the baths of Caracalla and the baths of Diocletian. The rooms around the courtyard formed the realm of intellectual culture. These were the spaces for strolling, reading, and conversation, while the baths themselves were the space of physical culture and bodily hygiene. The guest undressed in the apoditerium, the contemporary analogy is clock rooms. Then the visitor entered the warm room, tepidarium, to relax and acclimate to the bathing atmosphere. From there, he moved to the caldarium, where he washed in hot water, and then to the frigidarium, where he refreshed himself with cold water. Nearby were two hot rooms, a steam bath and another with dry heat. Attached to this block were areas for athletic exercise and a solarium. Here, among the tens of thousands of people who filled the enormous halls, corridors, and porticos, the usual social barriers of the ancient world dissolved. A kind of social and cultural uniformity emerged. It appeared to be something unthinkable within the framework of the traditional polis and, in fact, fundamentally at odds with it. Bath gradually became a mass obsession, a place of lazy sybaritic indulgence and by no means the purest of pleasures. A popular verse put it this way: But wine and love destroy the body's strength. But after all, life itself consists of but wine and love. There was a persistent trend, clearly coming from the population itself, for men and women to bathe together at the same time. Emperor Hadrian issued a special decree dividing baths into male and female, but less than half a century later, baths reappeared. Almost immediately after the first ban, the baths astonished not only by their scale, but by their incredible popularity. The courtyard of the baths of Caracalla measured 400 by 400 meters, while the central bathing block alone was 150 meters by 200 meters. In the baths of Diocletian, that central block reached 200 meters by 300 meters. The bath complex in the Rhine side of the modern Trier is so vast and luxurious that archaeologists, before identifying it, debated for a long time whether the enormous structure was a temple or an imperial palace. Baths were erected in nearly every city and town of the Roman Empire. In the 1920s, a group of German researchers compiled a comparative atlas of all known Roman baths complexes. Baths were built in every province of the empire, more than 300 in total. Follow us on Radio Ara, the radio for all voices, 102.9, 105.2 and 87.8 FM. The baths of Diocletian were the largest in ancient Rome. It spanned more than 13 hectares and followed a layout similar to the baths of Caracalla and the baths of Trajan. Its complex could accommodate up to 3,200 people simultaneously. The surrounding gardens were adorned with fountains and pavilions, and on the ground of the baths of Diocletian there were also a library, assembly halls and spaces for athletic training. Nowadays, the baths of Diocletian include the gardens of Piazza della Repubblica. The central hall, originally the Frigidarium, was rebuilt in 16th century, presumably by Michelangelo Buonarroti design. Nowadays, it serves as the Basilica of Santa Maria degli Angeli e dei Martiri. Another segment of the bath complex was transformed into the National Roman Museum. It opened in 1889. Museum demonstrates a collection of prehistoric Roman and ancient Greek art. The baths of Caracalla, built in the early 3rd century AD, stand out for their supreme grandeur and opulence. The overall dimensions of the baths are colossal. It is measuring 450 by 450 meters in plan. The design made accurate use of the site's topography on a hillside. The complex occupied an area of about 11 hectares, while the central bath building itself measured 150 by 200 meters. The baths were situated in Rome's most prestigious district, located along the Appian Way, just beyond the Capena Gate, between the Aventine and Cilician Hills. In the elevated southwestern section of the site, a massive settling reservoir was constructed, connected to the Aqua Marcia aqueduct. From there, water flowed effortlessly by gravity into the baths building, which was placed closer to the midpoint of the complex. The slope of the site also served as the foundation for the seating tiers of a stadium for gymnastic games, built at the base of the reservoir. Flanking the stadium were libraries, below stretched and landscaped park area enclosed by the main baths building and the semi-secular exedras of the complex. A wide range of bathing facilities was concentrated in the northern eastern part of the complex. These ranged from small private suites for individuals or families to the immense, lavishly appointed halls located in the central bath building. Unlike the complex's unadorned plastered elevations, the interior was strikingly luxurious. Floors were heated by circulating hot air, while walls and vaults were clad in colored marble, porphyry, and exquisite mosaic. The opulent decoration demonstrated columns with richly carved capitals, statues, elegant stone basins, and the interplay of water in fountains and pools. All these contributed to the creation of an exceptional atmosphere. The former bathing complex has since been transformed into a venue for opera and contemporary music. Its auditorium can accommodate up to 20,000 spectators. This unique open-air opera theater was inaugurated in 1837. Its most spectacular production remains Giuseppe Verdi's Aida. Follow us on Radio Ara, the radio for all voices, 102.9, 105.2 and 87.8 FM. The well-preserved baths in Bath, England, were built around 60-70 CE in the newly conquered province. The settlement called Aquasiles. It emerged around the local hot springs where traditional Roman baths were constructed. The complex was gradually built and expanded over three centuries. On the personal orders of Emperor Claudius, engineers have created a solid foundation using oak piles. The pools were lined with stone, while the floor and walls were covered with lead sheets to protect them from dirt. In the 2nd century CE, a wooden structure with a cylindrical vault was added. The complex included a caldarium, hot baths, a tepidarium, warm baths, and a frigidarium, cold baths. Entry was open to all free citizens. The baths remained in use until the end of Roman rule in Britain in the 5th century CE. After the Romans left, the baths fell into decay. Without maintenance, the springs silted up and turned into a muddy swamp. During archaeological excavations, about 130 curved tablets were discovered. Most of them contained spells directed against those who had stolen the clothing of bathers. During the Holy Roman Empire, Trier was known as Augusta Treverorum. Construction of the bath in the eastern part of the city likely began in the 3rd century. It was completed under Emperor Constantine, who reigned from 306 to 337 AD. The main bathing basin was the largest of its kind in the entire Roman Empire, with a maximum capacity of 650 people. The baths were supplied with thermal water from an underground spring. To heat it, 6 small boiler rooms were engineered. Hot water was distributed to the other spaces through vertical pipes to serve all hygiene needs. The baths also featured a hypocaust system for underfloor heating. the ceilings in the public areas reached a height of 19 meters. During the Middle Ages, the walls of the imperial baths were incorporated into the city's fortifications. For a time, the former baths complex in Trier was even used as a cavalry barracks. Extensive archaeological investigations began in the early 20th century but were interrupted by the two world wars. After World War II, large-scale excavations resumed, followed by restoration and partial reconstruction of the ancient structure. In the 1986, the imperial baths, as well as all of Trier's surviving Roman-era monuments, were inscribed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. To this day, the four boiler rooms remain standing and their ruins are accessible for anyone to visit and explore. Architecture then and now with Karin. In the 1840s, thermal springs were discovered in Mandorf. Architect Charles Arend was immediately commissioned to design a thermal complex. It opened in June 1847. In 1886, a balneological treatment center for needy visitors was added. The mineral water from the springs is known to help with rheumatism as well as gastric and liver conditions. Thanks to the spa's success, the village flourished, as wealthy French guests arrived to stay in the luxurious hotels that sprang up nearby. Among them was the writer Victor Hugo, by the way. In time, the town officially added Le Bain to its name, Mandorf-Le Bain, meaning Mandorf on the waters. Following the construction of a treatment center for the underprivileged, more hotels and residential buildings followed. Around the turn of the century, the state made significant investments. A pavilion for the original spring was added, along with a banquet hall, a reading room, and a conservatory. The country's first indoor swimming pool was also built and the park was expanded. A railway line to Thionville opened and a new spring named after Grand Duchess Marie Adelaide was later introduced. In the 1920s, a new spa center designed by architect Paul Vigor was inaugurated. Between 1998 and 2000, the buildings from the 20s known as Thermen were renovated, followed by the opening of a new sauna pavilion known as a Thermen were renovated, followed by the opening of a new sauna pavilion in 2001. In 2002, the conservatory was restored, and the following year, a French-style garden was laid out. Today, the thermal spa of Mandorf-Le Bain is widely recognized as a delightful destination for relaxation and wellness. The magic of water is both elusive and incomprehensible. It can transform its physical essence. It has no taste, no smell, and no form. It is a cradle of life, the quiet force that defined our cultures, civilizations, and lives. But beyond all this, water gives us something rare, the opportunity to be ourselves. The Romans understood this truth. Their baths were never simply buildings of stone and marble. There were sanctuaries where the heaviness of the world dissolved in steam, where architecture embodied a hymn to life itself. In these vast, luxurious halls, hypocrisy dissolved. Status lost its meaning. Time slowed. in the waters of time, we are no longer Romans or moderns. We simply remain. We simply are. When we immerse in water, we meet ourselves. We hear it. We feel it. And we return to ourselves. We are home.
Sometimes my self-respect took second place.